Hello and welcome back to the Audio DT with Reb T, the Audio Dvar Torah, the show where in a mini lecture we try to talk some lessons of the Parsha on the week in a few practical minutes and a few practical ways to keep. We are looking at Shoftim, we are looking at Deuteronomy Devarim chapter 16, chapter Tesain, we're looking at Pasuk Yudchet, right in the beginning of the Parsha. The Pasuk says, Shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha b'chol she'aracha, that the judges and the officers, the law enforcement officers, should be put in your cities, in your gates that Hashem gave you for your tribes, and they should judge the nation of true righteous judgment. So Rashi immediately picks up. But our question is, why set up judges? Why set up the officials? Why mention that Hashem is giving it to you for your tribes and they have to judge with the righteous judgment? We know that the society has to be a law-abiding society. We know that there has to be law and order. As Perkovitz explains, if there wouldn't be law and order and justice, a person would swallow his fellow alive. A person would eat his fellow alive, meaning there would be complete anarchy without real justice and judges and police and the like. But why is it saying in the pasuk giving to you for your tribes? Is there something we could learn from such verbiage, from such wording in the parsha here? Rashi immediately picks up and says, Shoftim v'shotrim, they're judges who decide the verdict. The sources again are from Chabad.org, the wonderful website and organization. These judges are the ones who decide the verdict, and shotrim are those that chastise the people in compliance with their order, who strike and bind, not found in early editions, according to this edition, with rods and straps until the guilty party accepts the judge's verdict. The judge is involved here. The judge is trying to help out here. The judge is pushing the people, trying to chastise the people. You think about the period of the Jewish history of the Shoftim. They were the leader par excellence. Of course, they had their faults and their shortcomings, but they were the undisputed, usually leader of the people at the time. Of course, they had their own faults. Of course, there were good ups and downs for each of them. But during that period, there was one person judging. And then throughout Jewish history, of course, there's the Sanhedrin, there's the Bestin, the one of three, the one of 21, the one of 70, plus ones, 71 or 72, really 70, or the like. I forget the numbers exactly. But there are people who are involved in taking care of the law and the order, being involved in these things, in the cases, in the Shoftim, of course, in the Sanhedrin. Hagadol would be right next to the Beis HaMikdash, because Beis HaMikdash brings peace, but the truth and the order and the justice has to be hand in hand with that. It has to be right there at the Beis HaMikdash, right there at the gate, ensuring that there's real justice and real order right next to the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi also points out that it should be in every city. In all your cities, there has to be judges, there has to be law and order everywhere around, everywhere you go. For your tribes, it means you shall set up for yourself. The understanding of the verse is you shall set up judges and law enforcement officials for yourself, for your tribes, in all your cities that Hashem is giving you. For your tribes also teaches that the judges must be appointed for every tribe, for every city. You can't just say that there's only going to be the Beis Din in Yerushalayim. You can't just say there's only going to be police in Yerushalayim. You can't just say there's only going to be officials, people keeping the peace in Yerushalayim, because what about the rest of the entire Eretz Yisrael and the rest of the entire world? It has to be everywhere that people are. They need to be all over. They need to be spread out, and they have to ensure the peace, ensure the law, ensure the order everywhere we are. They cannot be taken away from us. They have to be around every tribe in every city. And they shall judge with righteous judgment, appoint the judges who are expert and righteous, so that they will judge justly. That comes from the Sifri. So the main idea here being there has to be justice and judgment and good judges everywhere we go. It should be for everyone in every place as much as possible, but they have to do it in the right way. They have to be just, and they have to also be the ones that they try to be hochech tochiach et amitecha. They have to be the ones that are really trying to criticize, but in a good way, trying to get people to make sure that they're acting in accordance with the law as much as possible, and make sure that they're involved in doing the right things as much as possible. Chabad.org also picks up in this idea with using the sages from the different sources, and Pirkei Avos points out, you cannot be the one to judge alone. Ethics of our fathers, Pirkei Avos points out, in Dalet Chet, that there could be no judge alone except for Hashem. Hashem is the only judge that could judge by himself. That's why even a regular bezdin, the smallest bezdin, you think about Hataras Nadarim, for example, we do in a quote-unquote bezdin. People who want to annul now vows, quote-unquote bezdin, whatever that means nowadays, it has to be at least three. Why three? Because one person themselves cannot judge anything. And two people, they try to judge, they could have a tie. So third person comes in, makes sure that each person's not alone and that there's no tie. And it could be the tiebreaker, the person involved in resolving the dispute, resolving which opinion is the weightier one, resolving the argument if there's two opinions going against each other. You can't judge alone. No judge can judge alone except for Hashem himself. And the Chabad points out from the Talmud in Sanhedrin, monetary matters are decided by a court of three judges. Capital crimes are decided by a tribunal of 23 judges. Where is this derived? It comes from Bamidbar. The community shall judge, v'shaftu ha'eda, and the community shall say, v'hitzilu ha'eda. We need a community of judges arguing to convict the accused, and a community of judges arguing to exonerate him. Thus we have 20. A community indicates a minimum of 10. As pointed out in Bamidbar, a conviction requires a majority of two, as pointed out in Shemos, and a court of law cannot have an even number of judges. Thus, we need 23 judges. That's the Bezin HaGadol, but it's still not the Sanhedrin that has the 70 or so. It's 22, so that there should be a majority of two over the 10 saving judges, and another judge, so that the court should not be even number. Therefore, it has to really be the 23. That's how we get that we need to have that many judges, so it's not evenly based. They have an authority, they have a majority involved in the case. Of course, that comes from the Talmud in Sanhedrin, pointed out by Chabad. Chabad also points out with the explanations that they say from the sages, under Torah law, capital crimes are tried by a tribunal of 23 judges called a minor Sanhedrin, a Sanhedrin HaKatan. After hearing the testimony of the witnesses, the judges themselves would split into two groups. Those inclined to argue for the acquittal of the accused would serve as his defense team, seek to convince their colleagues of his innocence. Those inclined to convict would make the case for his guilt. Then the judges would vote. A majority of one was sufficient to exonerate, while a majority of two was necessary to convict. But what if all 23 judges form an initial opinion of guilt? What if the evidence is so compelling, the crime so heinous, that not a single member of the tribunal chooses to argue in favor of the accused? In such a case, the Torah says the Torah law is that the accused cannot be convicted and must be exonerated by the court. Lubavitcher Rebbe explains, the rationale behind this law as follows. No man is so utterly evil that there is nothing to be said in his defense. There is always some explanation, some justification, some perspective from which the underlying goodness of his soul can be glimpsed. This does not mean that he's going to be found innocent in the legal sense by a court of law. At times, the mitigating circumstances result in a verdict of acquittal. At times, they do not. But if not a single member of the court perceives the innocent side, quote-unquote, of the person standing accused before them, this, a court that has obviously very little understanding of who he is and what he has done, that such a court has disqualified itself from passing judgment on him. When I think of these sources, when I think of this pasuk, I think of the fact that many of us, myself very much included, jump to conclusions and jump to judging other people and jump to passing even minor judgments, minor thoughts about other people. But Pirkei Avos explains, and the sages explain, we cannot be a dayan of one. We cannot be a judge of one. First of all, we have to be done the kavschos. If you feel like you have to be judgmental, which you shouldn't be to begin with, you shouldn't pass judgment on anyone. You shouldn't have judgments on anyone, but you should try to keep an open mind. You should try to just always look for the truth of the matter. excuse me, and always try to look at the justice of the matter and try to figure out what's going on in the matter and then try to form an opinion, but not judge someone else. But if you feel the need that you have to judge for some reason, you have to judge lekaf sechus. You have to judge for the favorable of the matter. The Gemara talks about a story, which we'll get to in a second, but even so, if we realize we don't understand, we'll come back to the Gemara story, God willing, in a second, but before the thought leaves my mind, we have to understand that we shouldn't judge people. We don't know the full story. We don't know what's going on. We're missing the other side of the story, which is a great book by Art Scroll, highly recommended, goes through stories and shows the other side, realizing we're always missing a lot of crucial information, a lot of factual information. And we really don't understand. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Al Tehidan Yachidi, Pirkei Avos explains. Also, don't judge a person at a time when he makes a vow, at a time when he's in an emotional wreck, at a time when his dead is lying before him, Lolina. We should know from such things. Timing, essence, and understanding patience of the matter really is important. We don't know what a person is going through. We don't know what's in their head. We shouldn't label people or be quick to jump to different things because we have no idea what's going on in their situations and we don't know what's going on. Very often we're quick to say this or that or this or that, but when it would come to us, if somebody would try to judge us, try to jump on us, we would be so quick to defend ourselves, but we're so not quick to defend others, to try to jump to other people's conclusions. We try to judge a book by its cover, which we should never do, when we're missing all the chapters underneath. We don't know what's going on, and this comes to the idea that I talk about all the time, especially on the OT show. We're very quick to use the wrong type of language, labeling a person, showing a person based on the facet of the one thing we could see. It's not a kid that is a wheelchair-bound kid. It is a kid that is using a wheelchair. It's not a fat person. It's a person that happens to be struggling with weight issues. It's not someone that's mentally ill. It's someone that struggles with mental health difficulties. And it's not someone that's an autistic kid or a Down syndrome kid. It's someone that has Down syndrome. It's someone that has autism. Understand not to judge the person or sum up the person by the essence of that one thing. If somebody would say you're an angry person, they don't know anything else about you. Would you want someone to say that you're an angry, volatile person? That's summing up the essence of your being to one very bad trait. You could have a bad trait. You could have bad habits, but that doesn't sum up the whole essence of your being. A gambleaholic, an alcoholic, a smokeaholic, or whatever these words are. This is not the crux of their being. That's a term that's negatively used to sum up the entire person based on the one of many things, maybe, but the one major thing that brings them down that they fight with. It could be a lifelong addiction, a lifelong affliction, a lifelong situation, or a lifelong illness that they have to work on. Don't say that person is an anxious person. That person is, she's just full of anxiety. He's full of anxiety. That's one aspect of their life. What about the other thousands of things? There are all these websites that talk about all these people that deal with many different things, and it tries to explain to the person, explain to the one that has these things, explain to the one that struggles with so many different things how they have so many wonderful aspects. I remember the story my wife told me once of someone who married a guy that had problems and was addicted to some different things like drugs or the like, but she married him anyway, realizing that he was an amazing husband besides for the one habit, the one fault. He was an amazing father besides for the one terrible thing that he had to struggle with his whole life. Unfortunately, he succumbed to it and he passed away, but she still was so happy, I assume, that she was married to him, that she found him, that she had a kid with him, was able to have the kid with him. You have someone that struggles with money, struggles with smoking, struggles with drinking, struggles with any different thing. Why are you judging them based on the one thing that they have wrong, that they have difficulty with? I think about the story of the person that had a wonderful life for 100 years, let's say, and then the last 2 years, or let's say for 70 years. In the last years, he fell in very hard times, lost his home, lost his job, and had to turn to different things just to survive. But the obituary only focused on the last 2 years of his life, which was a dreadful end for him, a very sad ending for him. But what about the other 70 years of his life, the wonderful things he did in his life? He served in the army. He was a great dad. He was a great husband. He did so much chesed, so much kindness for the community. But somehow, some way, they only focused on the the last 2 years, the downward spiral. We tend to gravitate towards the negative. We tend to gravitate towards the cynical. You look at the campaigns, the politicians, for example, people in power, they always harp on the negative. A person lives 60, 70, 80, 90 years, but they try to pinpoint the one or two things, one or two bad things, one or two terrible things they ever did in their entire life. What about the hundred thousands of other wonderful things they did? These campaigns, they're smearing, they blast people based on a story that's taken out of context or a situation they don't understand. Or they look at someone and they just judge them. They sum them up based on the one thing. I don't understand why. We should not do that. That's not something that we should think to do, and we shouldn't do that at all. I mentioned before about a story from the Gemara. There's a wonderful story in the Gemara where somebody works, he's an indentured servant, a slave, I believe, and he comes to finally get his wages, and his boss says, "I'm sorry, I can't give it to you right now." He asks the boss, "Can you just give me some cattle, some livestock, some money, anything?" He says, "I don't have cattle, I don't have livestock, I don't have money." Then he took it all in stride. He said, "It's all b'dei shemayim, hakol b'dei shemayim, chutz mir shemayim, I'll take it in stride, gamza latova." He asks the boss, "Can I at least have some pillows? Can I at least have some blankets?" And the boss says, "I'm sorry, I don't have." And he says, "Can I at least have some canned goods, some food, some grain, something to take back to my family for my 10 years of hard work?" And the boss says, "I'm so sorry, I don't have." The man walks away dejected, very sad, but he thinks to himself, "My boss was always very good to me. He must have a very good explanation, a very good reason. Maybe he lost his money because he had to marry off a daughter. Maybe he had to lend out his clothing to someone who didn't have any clothing. Maybe he had to give away his house and lodgings to people who are making a simcha, just needed some room. Maybe there were reasons, I don't know. Dan Lekavschus, I'm sure something was explanatory. There was a good explanation involved." The boss comes to him later on to his house and brings some animals, brings him money, and brings him all these things to pay him back for the wonderful service that he did. And the laborer, the indentured servant, was so happy that he finally got paid. And the boss says to him, "Tell me honestly, what were you thinking when I told you I didn't have this, I didn't have that?" And of course, I'm paraphrasing the Gemara story. It's much better said in the Gemara than I could ever say it, but trying to just say it over to you. What were you thinking, he says to the servant, when I told you I don't have any of those things? And the servant said, "You know, I thought this, I thought that, I thought your money was out because you were marrying off a daughter maybe, and your clothing was out because you're giving it to someone who needed it, and your food you gave to the poor, and this and that and that." And the boss said, "Oh my gosh, kahava, this exactly is what happened. You were Don Lekavschus, and you actually said exactly what happened. My money I had to marry off my daughter. My clothing I had to give to the needy. My possessions were lent out. I literally had nothing to give you, but it was all for good reasons. And I'm so happy you were Don Lekavschus, the same way that you were Don Lekavschus on me and had compassion on me and understood my point of view, so too Hashem should do for you." And if that's not how the Gemara ends, then that should be a lesson that we learn anyway. But what a beautiful story. If we all could have the ability to judge in the right way, if we have to judge to begin with, we shouldn't judge to begin with, but if we could just judge in the right way, we could look at other people in the right way, we could try to find the truth in the matter, b'dan l'chavschus, try to see the other side of the story, try not to label people, try to understand people as being an essence of good. We have to understand, I believe that people at heart are good. Anne Frank says, who lived during the Holocaust, a terrible, terrible time in our life, she herself saw atrocities. I believe she was hiding in a room in someone's house and was terrified of death. I don't remember what happened in her story, but she wrote this diary. I remember the quote, seeing that quote growing up in my mom's basement, that I believe at the essence, even though so many things happen in life, I believe at the essence that people are good. If we could take that quote from Anne Frank, Lahavdil, and understand people at the essence are good. I say this a lot of times. We have this false conception that we think people are really either black or white, all good or all bad. Really, people are shades of gray. They're not all good and they're not all bad. They can be a very good person that does some very bad things. There are very bad people that do some good things. You think of a Yamach Shemo person in Germany. You think of Mussolini. You think of the barbarians throughout history. Yes, they could have been very bad people that did maybe some good things to their family or maybe something for something, but we're not going to get into that now. But in general, most people realm, or we're looking at the tabula rasa, to borrow from the philosophers like we've talked about before, a blank slate that we're given, a pristine soul, and the soul is white. It gets sullied, it has spots with black, but we believe, I think we should all believe about most people in this world, unless they're like a serial killer or the like, for example, really horrible, atrocious evil that people do, in general, it's white with splotches of black, not black with splotches of white, and not all black or all white. We all have to think in such a way, instead of judging the full person based on one error, based on one bad habit, based on one bad thing that they struggle with, or one bad thing they have in their life, or mistakes they made in their life, try to understand there's a full picture. Okay, so he has a very big difficulty that can negatively affect him, his family, and the world at large. But what about the thousand other things? We tend to shy away from things that we're scared of. We try to shy away things, don't even give shidduchim to people because we're so worried about this thing that they struggle with, this thing that they have. We don't want them to be happy. We deserve to be happy, but not everybody else. Everybody deserves to be happy. Everybody deserves to have a special someone in their life and a special family. Hashem gives everyone their own struggles, their own difficulties, their own abilities or disabilities, but don't label them based on the one disability. Don't label them based on the one bad thing, the one bad habit that they have to struggle with that Hashem gave to them. But they have so many amazing aspects of them. They could be an amazing dad. They can be an amazing husband. You don't even know about these people. They're suffering silently. They're suffering by themselves. You don't even know what goes on behind closed doors. You don't realize what people have, but it's very prevalent in our Jewish community and the community at large. But they do such chesed, such mitzvahs. They're really good to their family. They're really good to everybody else. They're really good workers. They're really hard workers, but they struggle, and we all struggle. Who are we to judge anyone else when we ourselves, if we would be put to the limelight, are we really such a tzaddik? Are we really such a tzaddikus? My favorite phrase, Sheva Yipol Tzaddik V'kam. The real tzaddik, the real righteous person, not talking about the Baal Shem Tov, not talking about Rav Moshe Feinstein, but the rest of us regular balibatim, balasabatim, regular people, we all get up, we all fall down, we all get up, we all fall down, we can't stay down, we all struggle with something. Everyone has to fight something. This person can have anxiety. This person can have addictions. This person can have afflictions. This person can have major anger. This person could be stubborn. This person could be so stingy. This person could be so nitpicky and so frugal. But then there could be people who are very generous, very humorous, very outward, very other-oriented, very selfless, but everyone could struggle with something. The point that we're learning here from Shoftim, the only person that could really judge alone is Hashem. We should not be judging to begin with. But if we feel the need that we want to pass judgment, which we shouldn't even do the beginning, l'chatchila, but if we're looking at other people, dan l'kav schus, judge only for the favorable, only for the merit. Try to find a reason or an aspect. And it's so easy to bring it to our own lives. We talk about how the judges, if they judge, you can have only at least 3 people, and then 23, and then 70 plus. So many people have to be involved in major life decisions. Yet we pass judgment, quote unquote, on people every single day, every single minute. We tend to sum up people based on one action. We tend to sum up people based on one bad thing. We tend to sum up people just how we see them. We automatically think they're this or that. I remember meeting different people right away. I was very intimidated. I saw this guy. A person could say, I saw this guy. He had a chain around his neck. He had a chain in his thing, and he seemed to be a real bully. He seemed to be a really tough guy. But really, he was the biggest sweetheart in the entire class. Had I judged him like that, had I not become his friend, had he not been someone that I got to know and got to talk to and realized he had the tough exterior because he lives in a bad neighborhood, for example, not a real person, just an example I'm explaining, we would understand belief. Beneath it, there's really someone to get to know and really get someone to get to understand. We got to use that person first language, people first language. Understanding one aspect of a person is only the aspect of that person. Don't be a judge. Only Hashem could judge. We tend to pass these ideas, these judgments, these thoughts that we have every day. Don't let them pass through you. Don't let them come through. Understand there's a whole book to a person, not just a cover. When you meet someone, try to meet the whole person. When you hear about someone, try to understand and look for the whole person. Dan l'kav schus, try to find a favorable aspect to the person. It's so easy in your own life. Why was she late to your meeting? There could be 100 reasons. Does she have little kids?
Does she have a mother or a sister or a brother, someone that really desperately needed their help? Where was the ride? He told me he'd be here at 8 o'clock. He's not here to 8:15. Maybe there was traffic. And when you become Don LeCascus, my wife is very good at this. I'm not so good at it, but I should be better. When you tend to be Don LeCascus, a lot of times that ends up being the actual reason, the actual thing that happened. Just like the Gemara story of the guy that was Don LeCascus for his employer, and that was Kachav. That's exactly what happened. If you do that in your own life, you'll tend to see that actually is what happens. If you're favorable for other people, even people that try to put you down, even people that try to mess you over, even a bad boss or a bad administrator or a bad person that quote-unquote tries to really mess you over, even though everything is from Hashem, understand that the person in the middle is not the instigator. Hashem is the one not instigating, but Hashem is the stimulus. Hashem brings you something. He may have it happen through someone. They may be the stick that it was that hit you, but the famous parable is if there's someone that's hit by a stick, if a dog hits at you with a stick, are you going to blame the stick or are you going to blame the dog? We're not blaming Hashem, but you understand where it's coming from. You know, your right hand hits your left, and are you going to punish the hand? You're going to punish yourself. Hashem is bringing something to you. Don't just be mad at the messenger. Understand behind it what is coming from it. Try to think about what judgment is trying to come to you, what you're trying to do. But the main thing to take out is try in your own life to be a little Don LeCascus. Every day things come to us, things happen to us, and we immediately jump to the negative. It's very easy to be cynical. It's very easy to be negative. It's very easy to feel like the world is against you and everything is against you and Hashem has it out for you, God forbid, and Hashem just wants to mess me up. But we know that Hashem is the caring Father, King of all kings, that wants nothing better for you than the best in your life. You think a parent has ultimate love? No one has more love for you than Hashem. Allah has kama v'kama. So much more is enthroned in Hashem's love for us than anything else. So anything sent to us is for the good. So if people, things happen in our day, try to look at a positive spin. Try to figure out a way that we could be Don LeCascus, that we could stop labeling people, that we could look for the aspect of the matter, understand how many elements there are to a person. A person is a combination of their experiences, their nature, their nurture, things they have to fight with, things they have to stand up with every day of their entire life. Try to understand this, and if something comes your way, try to be the spin on the matter, and try, even though it might immediately make you angry, try to think behind it. Even when we're dealing with our own kids, and I should take this to heart for myself, for my own kids, if they're doing something that seemingly annoys you, try to take the positive spin and see maybe they're not. If they keep tugging on you, immediately a person could be mad, but then if they see really they just want to show you a beautiful picture they made, that's a really good thing. That's not something to make you mad. That's something that should make you glad. We think about the idea of how that story also from the that famous story also, I don't remember where it comes from, a guy that was very, very angry, and his father told him, if you're ever very angry, sleep on it overnight, don't do anything about it. Don't jump to judgment, don't jump to conclusions right away, just sleep on it. He goes away for 10 years or so. When he comes back, he sees his wife hugging someone, and he gets so, so mad. Who in the world, and he looks like a grown man, who in the world is hugging my wife? I'm going to kill him, I'm going to take him out. No one has the right to touch my wife. But he remembered the thoughts of his dad. I think it's pointed out in the Agaris from Ramban also, but I don't remember where the source is from. But he says, my dad said to me, don't do anything overnight. Sleep on it. And in the morning, try to have a more rational view on it. And alas, he was so, so angry, but he slept on it. And he realized in the morning it was a long-lost son he never even knew he had. He left 10 years, 20 years, and he came back. In the olden days, they had crazy stories how long they were away for business. But when he came back, the son was fully grown, and had he acted on his anger, God forbid, he would have harmed his own son. So if you pass judgment too quickly, you pass din too quickly, very bad consequences can have. That's why Al Tehidan Yachidi El Achad, Hashem is the only judge. And Shoftim teaches us that to judge, judgment is a very weighty thing, a very grievous thing, a very important thing. You need to have a judgment of 3 or 23 or 70 plus. Again, I forget how many it's exactly, but it's a very large Sanhedrin involved, and we can't be the ones to judge at all. If you're judging, the only type of judgment we should do is Lakaf Zachus. try to find the benefit of the matter. We shouldn't label people. We should understand all their experiences, understand all the aspects of them, and not fault someone for the one bad thing or the one bad element that they might have that they struggle with. Understand there's thousands of aspects to them, thousands of good things they do, that a person by definition usually is good and has some bad splotches of bad things. And we understand to use person-first language, not labeling a person based on one aspect that you see, but understanding there's thousands of aspects that you don't see. And maybe then, if we stop judging each other, we accept each other, and we have beautiful love for each other, beautiful avas chinam, that is the key, maybe one of the ways to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. We talk a lot also on this show and other shows, sinat chinam destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. So what's the fix? Ahavat chinam is to fix and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe we could start having ahavat chinam by stopping judging one another, especially in politics, especially in viewpoints. Why should people hate each other just because they have differences of opinion? Don't hate the person. You can hate an evil action, but don't hate the person. Don't label them as a terrible person because of a mistake or an error. They're not evil person. They might have done an evil act, they might have done a bad act, doesn't mean that they're a bad person. We tend to throw people under the bus. The Al-Khit on Yom Kippur talks about this at length. We tend to make the very grievous error to hate a person instead of an action. You could disagree on a person, but why should it come to a full-out feud, full-out violence? If we understood to love each other, love one another, and have proper respect for one another, stop judging each other, and accept the person for who they are with their faults, but with the wonderful aspects they have also, maybe that would be a way to fully bring the world to a better state of peace, a better state of avat chinam, a better state of existence, and maybe then that would be a wonderful way to try to lay down the stones for the Beit HaMikdash. It says in every generation, there's a famous quote maybe from the Talmud, in every generation that the Beit HaMikdash isn't rebuilt, it's as if that generation destroyed it again and again. That means we haven't solved sinat chinam. We haven't solved the big three that the other Beit HaMikdash was destroyed on, idolatry and bloodshed and immorality. We have to solve those things and have ahavat chinam. If we could do such things, we can maybe bring about the building of the third Beit HaMikdash in our days. And maybe it starts with learning to stop judging people, stop labeling people. The only type of judgment to do is lekav zchus, to try to find the benefit of the doubt, giving everyone the benefit of the doubt, even if a situation seems sad, seems difficult, seems very much against them. They say if a tzaddik does something that looks negative, you have to judge it for the positive. Find a reason, because in general he's a tzaddik. And if a Russia, a real Russia, real Russia, not even the people we're talking about nowadays, which are technically Beinonis, all of us technically Beinonis, because we do bad, we do good, but hopefully a lot more good than bad. If it's a real evil Russia, like a Stalin or someone, Lahavdil, who murdered, killed thousands of people, if he does something that looks bad, you could judge it and probably think that it's something bad you should report. But a person in general, at tzaddik for sure, but the rest of us, if we see something that seems a little negative, maybe give them the benefit of the doubt. You see your friend Yanko go into McDonald's with his kippah on, don't assume he's going to buy pork. Maybe think that he really needed the bathroom. Maris Ayin is there, but you still have to do dan lekav zchus. That's the type of judgment we should do. If you have to do judgment, understand maybe he was dying of thirst and he bought a fully closed water bottle with a hechsher, that it's really kosher, and he did something very kosher. For persons going this way, going that way, and acting in a certain manner, try to find the benefit of the doubt. It's very easy to do it, to accustom yourself once you work in it. It's very easy to be cynical, be negative, but the best way, the best path to go is to be positive. This has been the Audio DT with Reb T. Join us next time, and I'm your host, Reb T.